Good afternoon, and thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Rebecca Ott, who will be speaking us with this hour. Rebecca is Director of Sustainability at the J.M. Smucker Company. So this interview is an element of IRI's new sustainability community. The sustainability community provides resources and networking opportunities for members as you promote sustainability in your innovation practices. So, as the community grows, you will be able to access facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. And these are on the fourth Thursday of every month. So, we'll be having one tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern. If you'd like to join, just let me know and you don't already have the calendar invitation. We have case studies and white papers with industry examples. We should have one coming out very soon. It continues to wend its way through the comms department. We have updates with insights and additional resources, and then interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these always take place on the fourth Thursday of the month at noon Eastern. And next month, we'll be interviewing Lam Research. And I'll be sure to sign all of you up to updates for the sustainability community if you're not already on there. And if you don't wish to get them, just let me know and I'll unsubscribe you. All right. One last thing, housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Rebecca. So, first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. And once we open the floor to questions, you can type the questions into the chat and I'll read it out for you, or you can come on video and ask your question, face to face. All right, all the boring stuff out of the way. Rebecca, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Lee. It's humbling to be part of this interview after Rick and Laura. So excited to be here.
Yeah, don't worry, it's going to be awesome. All right. So just tell us about your background and about J.M. Smucker, because it's not just J.M. So tell us all the things we need to know.
Yeah, definitely. So, my responsibilities are the director of sustainability at the J.M. Smucker Company, and I kind of came to this career through a winding path, but I've spent the past 27 years in CPG and food companies. I started at Procter and Gamble, and early in my career was involved in agricultural supply chain and purchasing. And from there, I spent 10 years trading green coffee, so had responsibility for our green coffee supply chain, and that actually transitioned into green coffee sustainability. So was able to pivot into that space, and it was in 2016 that I helped to develop the sustainability team, a dedicated team at Smucker's. So a little bit of my background, and then from a company perspective, I think a lot of folks are familiar with the Smucker name, but they may not be as familiar with all of our different categories and brands. So Smucker's is celebrating our 125th year, and we're currently $8 billion in sales, and it's across a diverse portfolio. So we have pet food and pet snacks. So brands like Meow Mix and Milk-Bone are familiar favorites. Also, our coffee business area includes brands like Folgers, Café Bustelo, and Dunkin'. And then we have our beloved consumer foods. So Jif and jams, jellies, preserves, as well as Uncrustables.
So basically, most of the stuff upstairs in my pantry.
That's good to hear.
Evening down to the dog
Right,
stuff.
you and 90% of the US population. So it definitely brands that people love.
Awesome. So where does sustainability sit then at Smucker, and how does it kind of cascade throughout the rest of the organization, which obviously is huge?
Yeah, so I like to say that sustainability really shouldn't sit with an individual or an organization, that it's a mindset that we really work to integrate into every employee's roles and responsibilities. But yes, we do sit within our legal team. So I report up through our chief legal officer and secretary. And as a team, we really see ourselves as a facilitator. So our work is to help measure some of the impacts, to connect the work that we're doing, and also communicate both internally and externally what activities we're doing, and then finally catalyzing. So I really think many on this call are working in this sustainability space. And what we try to do is live around the corner and look at what's impacting society and connect that and into our companies. So that's a bit of where we sit. In terms of how we cascade in the organization, it really starts at the board level. We have a nominating governance and corporate responsibility committee of the board. And from there, we have an executive ESG council. And then the implementation and work really starts to happen in our sustainability steering committee. One other critical part of our activities at Smucker's is within our operations and our manufacturing sites. And we have a Smucker quality management system, and one of the pillars is sustainability. So at each of the sites, there's a sustainability pillar owner, and they're really the hands and feet on the ground helping to implement activities and really work within our sites.
Okay. And so how has all of this evolved over the last, you know, say 10 years or so?
Yeah, great question. I think most people would agree that sustainability is a journey, that even if we look at our very first product at Smucker, it was apple butter, and that was the byproduct of the apple pressing, apple juice pressing process. So it's been around for 125 years, but we continue to find ways to mature that process. So I'd say first off has been really some critical goals that we had in 2016, and those focused on emissions, water, greenhouse gas reductions, waste, and that was very much focused on our sites and what we can control. And so as this process has evolved, we've really had to expand to our value chain and really looking at not only scope one and two, but scope three. And I think I've seen where folks have said that it's evolved from measuring our impact on the world to the world's impact on us. Because there's so many externalities and things from the outside that are impacting us, that we've really had to continue to expand our focus, not only what we can control, but also the value chain.
All right, and we're going to dive a little bit deeper into that that later on. But first, I want to talk about metrics. And you've mentioned measuring a couple times already. So what metrics are you all using in your sustainability efforts?
Sure. And that is a challenging question because there are so many metrics. And I think it's critical. We've all heard it said that what you measure is what you manage. And so it's really critical for organizations to have their metrics. And for us, there's definitely quantitative metrics. Those are the ones that are easy to measure. If we look at reduction targets, our science-based targets that we have around emissions and emission intensity, or water goals and reductions there. We also have waste diversion to divert over 95% of our waste from landfill. Those are pretty straightforward. It's the qualitative metrics that I think are becoming really important. And for us, those are more theory of change types of metrics. So I can give the example in our coffee strategic initiatives. We're working at origin with coffee growers, and we're looking at how do you implement good agricultural practices and increase access to inputs in order to have livelihood improvements. And so those qualitative metrics are focused on the number of growers that you're working with and the adoption of practices. And from those adoption of practices, how is that leading to cost reductions and yield increases? And then there you get increased profitability or increased livelihood improvement. So I'd say qualitative metrics and activity-based can be just as important to really show the progress that you're making. The other opportunity is around policies. And one of the things that Smucker has done around policies is just using that as a tool for compliance, making sure that with a global supplier code of conduct that you're able to articulate what is expected of your suppliers and then be able to measure the compliance to those standards. So a couple of different quantitative, qualitative, and policies as ways that we're measuring the success of our sustainability efforts.
And moving on to kind of the next step from that, you know, how are you trying to assess the ROI on all of these efforts?
Yeah, I think this is an evolving space. So certainly ROI is critical to any business and really understanding that in the sustainability space. I like to think of it as two sides of a coin. You have value protection, those things that you are doing to manage risk. And then you have the side of value creation. And those are the activities to grow your business, new products, new technology, all of those things are part of the value creation. And I had just this week a brilliant peer make the comment that a lot of times you have to think of ROI as risk of inactivity, of inaction. And so that piece, I think, is just a really great question. As sustainability leaders, we have to ask ourselves, well, what is the risk of inaction? How do we need to be addressing some of these challenges? We also think about ROI from a long-term perspective. It's not just the quarter by quarter, but really, how is this helping us to transition our business in a positive way for the longer term? We want to have another 125 years. And in order to do that, we have to make decisions now that will support that.
That risk of inaction, I think there's something in the water, because somebody just brought that up on a digitalization call on Friday to justify digitalization investment as well. But it's very true and so difficult to prove too. Like, how do you prove a negative? Oh, it's a tricky one. Have you guys had a stab at that yet? It's so hard, I know.
Well, I think one of the tools you can use is benchmarking, is really looking at some of the peer set. It's also understanding the regulatory environment and what are steps, the no regret steps that help to move you towards the direction that regulations are going. So I do think there are ways to quantify that and to at least make it tangible.
Yeah, that's so hard. So moving to the process side of things, you know, how are you integrating sustainability into your processes?
Yeah, well, I'd like to say it goes back to that sustainability mindset of really knowing that people at Smucker's are passionate about doing the right things. And when our strategy connects to purpose, then we really see that integration happening. One way that I like to look at sustainability process is through the corporate lens. So there are things that we can do from a corporate level that really help to drive progress. An example that we've had has been around renewable energy. And I have an expert on my team who really drives this strategy. And in 2018, we kind of made our first from concept to development to execution on a virtual power purchase agreement. And those are very complex agreements. They require a lot of different functional leaders to be involved, but happy to report that it became operational in 2020, and in 2021, 87% of our grid electricity is matched by RECs from our Plum Creek wind farm. So really looking at transformational ways that at a corporate level, you can impact your sustainability goals. The second way is more through that Smucker Quality Management System and our sustainability pillar owners that are sitting in our sites. They're looking at real-time data, and they're conducting energy audits and process reliability and efficiency. So for them, it is part of the expectation of how we deliver quality food is also managing these sustainability aspects. And then another example is within our research and development teams. And I would say that within the process there, you know, they're looking at systemic changes. So how do we work with academics and organizations that are doing research on some of our critical products? So World Coffee Research does a lot on coffee and looking at weather tolerant varieties or disease resistant peanuts. So there's so many ways that within the R&D function that they can really integrate sustainability into their processes and thinking when they're designing the products that we're going to market.
Well, that's so interesting to think about all the different things that can happen to a peanut plant or a coffee plant.
And how we can make
them better. You've come a long way since apple butter, I assume. Although the apple butter is amazing. I'm a fan. So how about risk in the supply chain? I promised we'd get back to this. So how is that working? I know coffee is a huge issue. Can you touch on that? And then all the other things too.
Yeah, so it probably goes without saying, but worth stating that it really comes down to identifying your risk. So there are so many varied risks and topics that one way that we have found to be very informative and strategic is to conduct an issues assessment. So other companies call this a materiality assessment, but it's really looking at the topics and understanding from the different stakeholders what is important to them. And for us, those risk assessments kind of help to inform how we prioritize all of these challenges that exist. So once we've got the understanding and visibility to the risks, then we're really looking at prioritizing our actions and figuring out where we need to be focused. And the final piece then becomes collaboration. A lot of these challenges require that we're engaging with subject matter experts, with other peers, and really working for more systemic changes. So I can give you an example within our supply shed for wheat, corn, soy, all coming from the Great Plains, and in particular, some of that from the northern Great Plains. And so we have seen where this particular region has been experiencing drought, has some challenges related to water. And so we partnered with the World Wildlife Fund and are working on grassland restoration and really seeing how conservation can help protect those regions and help recharge the water sources. I think that is the direction that we're going to have to continue to move, is finding ways that we can have a bigger impact through the efforts that we have with other organizations.
Okay, so that's super complicated and kind of, it just seems so far down the line, but it makes sense. But how do you balance that with value creation then? You know, when you're kind of, when you're assessing the risk to the Great Plains, how do you make that lump, that jump all the way down the line to, okay, here are our Uncrustables?
Yeah. Oh, it's a great question. And really, if we think about, like you mentioned, wheat is what's going into bread making, which is going into our Uncrustables. And so when we're evaluating each of those aspects, it really goes back to on farm, what are some of those practices that are being utilized? What are the mills and really our partners' engagement with the supply chain and in those with those growers? And you know, we're also always looking at, from an innovation perspective, bread making was one of those where really finding the right types of flour so that when we produce those sandwiches, we don't have leakers or holes in our sandwiches. And so there was research done around what's the best kind of wheat and ways for us to bake bread so that we meet those needs. And that's just a great way to highlight how innovation can be impacted from farm all the way to our finished sandwiches.
Oh, I love that, leakers and the holes in the bread. I hadn't even thought of that. But yes, they are surprisingly resilient, those Uncrustables.
And delicious.
Without a doubt. So moving on to the regulatory environment, we're talking about food. I mean, all of our members are aware of the regulations dealing with that, but I think food is certainly one of the most heavily regulated industries. So how do you deal with all of the shifting regulations, especially, you know, being a global company?
Yeah, I think the first thing that we recognize is that regulations serve a purpose. It's important to have standardization, food safety, and continuous improvement. I mean, those are all good things that regulations help to provide. Where things get challenging is when they are fragmented, so state by state legislations, or it's looking at one portion of the of the challenge and not considering the entire the unintended consequences of some of those decisions. So sometimes with trade, with renewable standards, those can create some challenges. So for us, as we're looking at regulations, first, we have a very proactive government relations team, and they are really monitoring the legislation that's being discussed, and if we can get involved early with input, we're doing that. They're also representing our view as an American manufacturer. We certainly have expertise and knowledge that we can provide to the process. And then the second, we work to communicate that to our internal teams, because part of the challenge with legislations is the time frame. The timelines can be very quick turnaround. So we're really trying to keep our internal teams up to speed on the direction that legislation is taking, and then when it becomes a regulation, how we're going to address compliance. And then the final piece is being active and relying on our industry associations and organizations like IRI and NAM and really helping keep us working with them to keep us informed of what's out there, because it is such a broad universe. It's also working with your peers and understanding what's compliance going to look like. What are some of the challenges we need to consider and be activating against? And I think we're going to continue to see regulations evolve, and we're trying to be sure that we're proactive.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So switching gears slightly, I want to touch on staff, because you said that, you've got individuals kind of embedded in the facilities as well. What sort of training are you offering those staff, and then also kind of as it cascades down from them?
That is a great question. And I think training happens informally and also formally. So within that sustainability pillar, there are what we call step-up cards. So as an individual is growing and learning in their role at representing sustainability, they're stepping up and kind of achieving the recognition as they go. For more of our corporate employees, we have sustainability ambassadors, those passionate employees that want to know more and kind of be on the cutting edge of what we're doing. We also utilize the myriad of events and holidays that are out there, like Earth Week, to really get our message and activities out there. We've also started within Workday some formal training where employees can go in and they can learn about climate action and what that means to Smucker's, or sustainable packaging and what that means to us. So those are more self-guided, but again, a lot more information that's provided. And then another side that has really been exciting for Smucker's is on the employee engagement and volunteering side. I think we learn a lot when we're able to volunteer and participate. And one of the organizations we've been supporting is Partners in Food Solutions. And they are a skill-based organization that works with African food companies and helps to connect US and Europe-based food company employees with clients in Africa. So for Smucker's, we had over 925 volunteer hours in the last year, which supported then 100,000 farmers in Africa and unlocked $7 million in investment for these organizations. And it just personally, I can attest to the value because I have a mentoring a young professional woman in Kenya, and it is just very eye-opening to see the challenges that they're experiencing and just to see that the unlock that skill-based volunteerism can have on these companies. So I think that's a form of training. It makes our employees stronger in the roles that they're doing, and also has just a exponential impact on the organizations that we're working with in Africa.
Hmm. Yeah, and it makes people feel better about their jobs. I imagine they love it.
Yes.
Awesome. So I'm going to open the floor to questions, but I have one last one for you. So just where are you going from here? Looking to the future, what are your next steps?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And first of all, continuing to integrate sustainability into the business strategy and decisions. I know that most individuals here probably very connected into the work, and what helps to increase the impact is really when it is core to the business and we can really show the benefit and result. So wanting to continue to integrate into our business strategies. I also I'm optimistic that we're going to have better ways to measure the contribution of nature-based solutions and the planet so that we don't have to spend as much time on the reporting, and we can really focus on impact. So hoping that technology helps us to collect information and to improve monitoring and verification in order for us to thrive together. It's a lot of effort, as most people know, goes towards collecting data, and we don't want to just be able to collect data. We want to be able to have impact. So I'm looking forward to that that aspect of this whole space evolving.
Awesome. All right. So the floor is open to questions. Does anyone want to? You can unmute yourself and jump in, or you can type it into the chat. Oh. We have one from Jeff Strahan. Jeff, go ahead. Are you able to unmute yourself, or do I need to do it?
Yes, I think coming through. Okay.
Awesome. Yep.
Rebecca, appreciate your thoughts. Wanted to know, have you guys implemented a carbon tax or a shadow carbon tax on any of your capital expenditures or anything along those lines?
So that is a great question. We do not currently have an internal price on carbon. I think it certainly drives the visibility to that area of a product if companies are doing that. We do include sustainability in our capital request process. So we are looking at this particular project will improve emissions or energy, and we are marking that, but we are not doing a internal price on carbon at the moment.
Thank you.
All right. And we had one come in from Kiki Chen from Techner Apex, and she's asking, can you share some examples of, one, the qualitative and quantitative metrics that your company uses to measure sustainability goals, and two, your collaboration with academia on sustainability initiatives? So the first one is examples of qualitative and quantitative metrics that you're using.
Yeah, definitely. So when we think of qualitative, it's, I would say, more of the soft metrics. So in the example of projects with coffee growers, we're looking at, this is the number of farmers that are participating in training. It is quantitative, but it doesn't really drive at an impact or an outcome per se. So that's why we would consider that more qualitative. And so, you know, with that, the 15,000 growers that we're working with in Indonesia, how many of those are adopting practices? So then we can look at and say 75% have adopted these practices, and those, again, we would say are more qualitative. It isn't until you get to 50% yield increase, which is what we have seen on our projects in Indonesia, that you start to really see the quantitative. And so that particular impact with coffee growers in Indonesia means that they have greater yield increases that enable improved livelihood. From a quantitative metrics, we've set science-based targets. So for our scope 1 and 2, it's an absolute 28% reduction by 2030. We have a scope 3 reductions of 22% intensity reduction. And those are published metrics that we are including in our corporate impact reports, as well as ESG reports that we're sharing. From a collaboration with academia on sustainability initiatives, there are many great examples. We've worked with the Peanut Foundation, which does a lot of research on the genetics and really understanding the various components of peanuts and working with the Peanut Foundation, we've been able to help to identify ways to improve the disease resistance of peanut varieties, of increasing peanut yields. All of those are kind of part of the questions that we pose to academia and have them come back and really bring us some solutions. So hopefully that gives you some ideas of ways that we've been working.
That's amazing. I had no idea there was a Peanut Foundation, and now I do. As a fan of peanut butter, this is a big day for me.
Well, all right. All of those great peanut growers in the U.S. So it's such an important crop to the U.S. And so definitely USDA does great work in peanuts and as well.
This is awesome. So the next question that's come in is, are you currently tracking upcoming regulations and taxes as part of the value protection approach? If so, can you share how you are connecting this information and financial analysis? So super simple.
Right. Straightforward. No, great question. So what really comes to mind is some of the packaging legislation. And when we think about the extended producer responsibility, which really looks at the material that you're utilizing for your packaging, and assesses a fee based on the recyclability and access to recycling for that particular material. We are working with our industry associations to track that information, because these legislations are very much state by state, and because they're not standardized and there's not a federal regulation that has passed, we have to be monitoring these laws. And so as it comes down to connecting that information into financial analysis, yes, we're looking at some of the models of EPR in Canada and in Europe, and using those to inform what could be some of the costs. We're also using that as in our process for what packaging materials make the most sense, and really trying to live around the corner and be ready to meet those regulations when they come up.
Awesome. All right. Next question. So, being site-driven sustainability pillars, can you share what role the R&D and other technical cross-functional teams play in the sustainability journey? And how did Smucker build capabilities and competencies to support the sustainability journey?
There's a lot in there. Yeah. So I'll see if I can tackle some of the points. And then we can have follow-up questions. But so the first piece that I would point out is from a cross-functional perspective, we do have a sustainability steering committee, and that includes leaders from purchasing, from R&D, from commercialization, finance, you name it, across the organization. And so within that particular leadership team, we're really discussing these topics, and we're looking at the impacts that they have. And so definitely it starts from a strategy perspective and cascades down to an initiative level. In terms of building those capabilities, a lot of it has started with these trainings that we have, is helping individuals to understand what our strategy is, how the work that they do connects into our goals and our objectives, and then really utilizing their knowledge and expertise to help deliver solutions.
Okay. And you mentioned, I'm doing follow-up. So you mentioned that, that the R&D folks are doing a lot of work about identifying, different crops and different types. I won't pretend to understand all of it. So, how has that relationship worked with, is that kind of coming from above, kind of pushing the R&D folks to do this, or are they kind of taking the initiative and kind of running with it on their own? How does that mesh together?
I maybe Lee, the question is, where do they connect?
Yeah, that's probably a better way of putting it.
So a piece of it is both at a corporate level. So we have goals as a company that we want to achieve, some of our climate action goals. And when we look at those, we know that it has to come through the work that we do within our brands and businesses. So in that regard, R&D is really looking at how do they help bring new technology or bring new products that will help us support emissions reductions. And I can give the example, we've had a Folgers product that's launched, and really it was driven from this idea of, you know, how do we from cradle to grave improve the product, and through reformulation and proprietary technology, we're able to fully utilize the green coffee bean, and thus we don't have as much waste, and we don't have as much volume that's needed. So that particular product is delivering value to the consumer, but it's also across the supply chain a really big environmental impact.
Oh, I love that example. That's super helpful. Thank you. And we're just going to take this one last question, which seems to actually be several questions. So I'm sorry, but it's a few questions on the upstream value chain. Are you able to collect all of the relevant data from your suppliers? And once you collect and analyze that data, how do you engage and collaborate with suppliers to increase their sustainability quotient and alignment with your goals and objectives? Are you embedding sustainability requirements in supplier contracts? And I think you touched on this a little bit, but I think we're wanting to go a little deeper.
Lots of great questions in there. And, you know, I think what I'll kind of focus on is how we're collaborating with suppliers, because it's definitely part of that maturing process where really we've looked at what are the things that we can control and in our own four walls. And now we're really going and working with some top tier priority suppliers and understanding the work that they're doing and how does that connect to our goals. And then the next level, which I would say is something that we're thinking towards, is, you know, how do we begin to provide training and insights to our suppliers on these topics who are maybe not as familiar. So we are really early stages. It's been more of a process of understanding what suppliers are doing and helping to understand emissions, water, waste. You know, those are always sort of the first tier topics that we're thinking about with our suppliers.
Oh, that's super helpful. Thank you. And I think we're going to wrap it up here because we've put you through a grilling and we appreciate it. So, Rebecca, thank you so much for taking the time to answer all of our questions today and to share all of the work that you all are doing. I hope everyone else will be looking in their pantry and having a different view, just like I am today. I might even go and eat an Uncrustable to celebrate.
appreciate the questions and really the engagement from the group, and happy to be able to share some of Smucker's sustainability journey. And we did just a couple weeks ago received a recognition as one of Barron's most sustainable companies. So in their 100 top companies. So that has been certainly something that we are excited about.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you to everyone else who joined us today and for contributing your questions. And I hope to see you tomorrow on our roundtable discussion and next month when we talk to Lam Research about their sustainability ERG group or ERG. All right. Rebecca, again, thanks so much. This has been fantastic.
Thank you.
Oh, and Charles Barkley loves Uncrustables too. Is that what that article says?
Yes, the shout out during the NCAA. Charles Barkley is a supporter.
And now he knows that they're more green and sustainable. I'm sure he'll be pleased with that too.
Exactly. Thank you, Lee.
Awesome. Thanks, Rebecca. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.